Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Good evening, everyone. It is October 20th. It is 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, and we are back with the second episode of JewelCast of the season, and the first one that's actually during the season. I'm going to pretty much launch right into it because we've got an hour tonight. We're going to be a little shorter after going for an hour and a half last time. Arguably, though, we have more to talk about, so no long-winded intro. I'm going to get right into it. We may be having one or two more guests calling in, but for now, it is myself and it is James. James, how's it going?
It's pretty good, and I got to give a shout-out to my boys in blue. That's all I need for my birthday yesterday, so it was a really good present for me.
Oh, man, happy birthday.
Thanks.
And we could spend the next hour talking about the Dodgers. I'd be more than happy to. And the next 10 minutes or so, asking why it's going to cost $800 to get into the stadium. But we should probably focus on the hockey before I get too upset about ticket prices.
I don't think that's the focus of the call.
No, as hard as we try sometimes. We did have one podcast a couple years back with the editor of the Dodgers SB Nation blog, Eric Steven, who is also maybe better at puns than anyone I've ever encountered in my entire life, and it was pretty good, but it was back when the Kings were doing really well and the Dodgers were struggling a little bit. So the tables haven't exactly turned, but they're as good as we are, or we're as good as they are so far. What do you think? Is this all for real, James?
You know, I love what I'm seeing. You know, who my predictions are all wrong, and I don't think anyone would have predicted that we would be the only team undefeated in regulation after six games in. Nobody would have predicted New Jersey doing so well, Toronto doing as good as they are this fast. Nobody would have predicted Washington off to a slow start, as well as Boston, Rangers, Montreal. And nobody would have predicted that Vegas would do this well. So I think everybody's predictions have been way off this season, but I love what I'm seeing. I think this is John Stevens. This is brilliant coaching and organizational skills on his part. And if you think about it from a business perspective, Sutter, you know, as great as he is, he inherited a team that was young. Kopitar and Brown were very young at the time. Kopitar had a lot of talent, but not the leadership. Brown was a tough guy, but he would stayed too far to hit somebody. Dowdy was still a child back then, and he still is now. Sutter brought a lot of discipline, a lot of necessary discipline, and he integrated really tough guys, tough, gritty guys that will cut your finger off, like Richards and Williams and Stoll and Reguerre and guys like that, to really bring some playoff toughness to the team. And he really ran this team like an assembly line. You know, regimented roles. Everybody does the same thing over and over again. Endless cycling, 200-foot checking, grinding game. So, you know, it's very tough. And you know, some of the toughest jobs out there are assembly line jobs, where you're expected to do the same thing over and over again. And that's what the Kings were doing during Sutter's time. And you know, it gets very tough If you're in a job like that, then, you know, God bless you. But it's really tough and it's really draining. And we saw evidence of that last season with the team starting to tune out a little bit. And John Stevens, he unleashed the Kings to be creative again. Where do the Kings dominate? Under Sutter, they won the Cup. But where do they truly dominate? Well, it was 3-on-3 overtime. And why is that? Because that's when the system was gone. There's no system. It's all about unleashing your individual creativity. And Stevens has allowed them to bring out their creativity more. So it's a really ideal combination of charging the net, one-timers, two-on-ones. I love how they attack shorthanded whenever possible, and if they don't have an opening, they pass it back only to clear it again to take seconds off the clock.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. So not only do they have more creativity under Stevens, but they're also still a good, big, checking, grinding team, so they can win puck battles. That's how they make up for their alleged lack of speed, as is the premium in today's NHL. So I love what I'm seeing, but yes, I think we need to talk about Carter.
Yeah, I think we do. we were trying to sort of plan out how this dual cast was going to progress, and I felt like it would be hard to launch too far into anything about how the Kings have been doing without addressing Carter's injury, because it's going to change quite a few things. Primarily the fact that the Kings had three forward lines that were pretty much, not to say set in stone, but there wasn't a lot of shuffling going on. We were seeing Brown, Kopitar, Iafallo, which we'll definitely get to later tonight, but we had Clifford, Shore, and Lewis thrown for a little bit of a loop when Kyle Clifford was injured, but Clifford is a replaceable player in that you can put in an Andy Andreoff or not a Jordan Nolan anymore, but in the past, a Jordan Nolan who you could probably get 90% of the output from and 90% of the pugnaciousness. But Jeff Carter is a little bit of a different story for anyone who's been living under a rock for the last 48 hours. Carter was cut on the foot with Jeff Petrie's skate against Montreal. The best case scenario, and those are the exact words used by Bob McKenzie, is 6 to 8 weeks, which I would be absolutely thrilled with if we could get him back by then. Erik Karlsson had a cut that actually partially severed his Achilles tendon and was back in 10 weeks. But that's a little bit unusual. This is the kind of injury that can take a while to recover from, and certainly the Kings want to be careful. But what we're looking at is essentially 2 months or more without Jeff Carter, who was the Kings' leading scorer last year. And even though he's gotten off to a slow start, has, you expect that he's going to be top three in scoring for the Kings, top three in goals with, you can almost pencil it in. So it's going to be a challenge for the rest of 2017. Now, the early solution that John Stevens has taken is to move Nick Shore up between Pearson and Toffoli, and I doubt that's going to be a permanent solution. I don't think there is a permanent solution. What are your thoughts, James? Do you think that's the right approach? Do you want to see a little more shuffling and a little less just trying to slot somebody in where Carter is?
Well, all my happiness that I expressed earlier is now tempered. I think it is for all of us. Jeff Carter, our leading scorer last season, it's a devastating loss for the Kings. However you hash it, it's no doubt about it. It's a devastating loss. You can't replace a 30-goal scorer. The Kings
absolutely
do not compete. The Kings do not compete without him. They are not contenders without him. He was brought in 2012. We traded Jack Johnson because we needed a guy like him, and he took us to the Cup that year. He helped take us to the Cup in 2014. So there's no way you contend without him. Now, it's but that's case scenario you said. It's that would be okay. The Kings can survive for 6 to 8 weeks, but if it's a situation where we're talking, tendons, muscles, something structural, a problem with the structure of the foot, then I don't want to say it, but let's just not say it.
Please don't. I think we're. Yeah, it's going to be rough. I think Carter is, you know, and you look at the old system that the Kings had under Sutter, and that maybe would have lended itself better to missing a key player like that in a key spot. You when you have the players sort of drilled down in that defensive aspect and really sticking to the same sort of system, it's a lot easier. Not to say that the Kings wouldn't have missed Carter last year, 2 years ago, but it's you feel like you can just sort of slot somebody in and maybe have less of an adjustment period. Even if the scoring goes down, you can, you know, keep winning close games because that's what Sutter's Kings did. I'm going to just go ahead and divert very quickly because it looks like we have Robin on the call. And Robin, do you want to launch right into some Jeff Carter anguish?
Sorry, there's noise in my house. Totally missed your question. What did you say?
I was going to let you express some Jeff Carter anguish. It's not really a question.
Oh, I think I expressed it pretty well. You know, it's kind of like everybody's been saying. They can survive. Like it's not. I don't want to say it's not a big deal because it's obviously a huge deal that their 1/1A center, as John Rosen put it, that he'll be missing a significant chunk of time. However, John Stevens is a defensive whiz. Like, I couldn't find any articles, but I do remember back when other, like, defensemen were traded and John Stevens was just known as, like, the defensive specialist coach. So if any coach can really tighten up the defense and really get everybody to just focus on perhaps giving up more of that offense, and I know this is what exactly – we were trying to avoid, but there's not really who can do when you're a 30 goal scorer just is on vacation, shall we say, for 8 weeks. Well, I shouldn't say vacation, but I'm a little stressed out without Carter.
And if I may, Eric, if I may, you know, Kings are going to really need to think here because they're off to a brilliant start, but at the same time, the window to contend is still 2 years. That's the time remaining in Drew Doughty's contract. So, as much talk as there has been about playing the kids and let them grow, this team is still very much in win now mode. Carter is a devastating loss. So if the Kings are still committed to contending in the next 2 years, and knowing that they can't contend without Carter, it has really tipped the scale in favor of look for a Muzzin or Martinez trade this season.
Oh God, don't even mention that. We're going to get to that later, but like it sends me into a tizzy anytime we talk about trading Martinez or Muzzin. I'm like, really? You want to bite off your own arm and shoot yourself in the foot at the same time? Wow, sounds great, guys.
Yeah, but Robin,
I have no feelings about this.
Robin, I know all the Kings fans love Alec Martinez. He's the hero. He's going to be forever enshrined in Kings lore after the 1B most famous moment in Los Angeles sports history. Those highlights never get old. I understand. But look what's in the pipeline. Oscar Fanberg is doing really well. So is Christian Follin. So if those two guys start doing really well, Muzzin and Martinez, who are up there in age and also carry quite sizable, not heavy, but sizable contracts, they're prime targets. They're one of our most tradable assets.
Maybe don't overpay Derek Forbert. Not that $2 million is going to break the bank, but anyway.
Yeah, we had to rope that in just a little bit. Go ahead, Robin.
For me, the reason why I say don't trade Muzzin and Martinez, the Martinez is forever enshrined in LA Kings lore, but I care a little bit less about the past than I do focusing on the present. And the truth is, unless Gravel gets a whole heck of a lot better quite quickly and we start employing guys more like him, guys that have better, skating ability. But my focus is that it's a mobile defense So that's what I'm looking at. That's what I like about Martinez and Muzzin, is that especially as we are in win-now mode, not we, I keep inserting myself into the team like I have anything to do with this, but the Kings are in win-now mode. So it would be foolish, in my opinion, to trade somebody who gives you that little spark of offense. I mean, one of the things that the Habs say that Pacioretty is struggling is because, yes, their defense sucks, but who's there to break out the puck and skate it up and get it to him? Max Pacioretty is a highly talented forward, but he can't do it all by himself, even if Connor McDavid apparently can.
I understand that, but I guess we're going to make this the debate of the night. But you just said mobile defense. Jake Muzzin is actually not very mobile. He's actually a high-risk, high-reward guy. If you look at his stats right now, one goal, four assists, but a minus two. So he can be really brilliant at times, and he reached Team Canada level, but at the same time, he has the worst plus-minus rating on the team.
Martinez, talking to plus-minus, though, so I can't really debate on that part, I guess.
Martinez, he's really handy with our offense. He's our best offensive defenseman option, but he's 30 now. We've seen his ceiling. He's already shown us everything that he's gonna show us. So, and this is not, there's precedent to a move like this, and this is the exact same thing we did in 2012. We traded a very popular defenseman, Jack Johnson, for proven offensive help, and it's taken us to the cup.
It's not a good comparison.
Everybody's got feelings about Muzzin. I know that last year he had sort of a season from hell. I know that so far this year he's been on the ice for goals against, but he's also, I can't possibly put him in the same sentence as Jack Johnson. But more to the point, I don't know, like, if we're talking about win-now mode, what kind of forward do we need to get from a Muzzin or Martinez trade? It obviously has to be a top-six level forward. It's got to be someone who's versatile. Maybe there's more reason to do it with Carter out, but it's got to be someone, you know, it's got to be a 25, 30-goal man. If you're talking about a top-four defenseman, and like it or not, Muzzin and Martinez are, you know, they're never not going to be top four defensemen on this team. And we need, if we're going to even consider trading them, if, you know, we're the Kings, it's got to be for a forward that's, you know, a game changer, especially because you have $4 million defensemen for the next 4 years who, you know, top four defensemen aren't getting any cheaper. And they're
and two names come to mind right away. Two names come to mind right away, Eric.
All right, I'm listening.
James Neal, Evander Kane.
Mm-hmm.
We know that James Neal is going to be a free agent next season. He is pretty much the star of the Golden Knights right now, but Vegas wasn't expecting to contend. Well, nobody expected them to even make the playoffs. This is a brilliant start that they're going through because they're, you know, they have no ego, so they're playing as a team and playing really fast. We know that the law of averages is going to catch up to them eventually, so nobody really expects them to sustain this level. If once Vegas starts cooling down, they're going to really need to think about whether they want to invest big money into a James Neal. They have been very open about their desire to build organically through the draft. So rather than commit a bunch of money to James Neal, they'd rather there's a sense that they would rather see what they can get for him in return in terms of draft picks. With Evander Kane, the Kings have been interested in him before. I'm a little sour on him, especially after the costly penalty that he committed against the Kings the other day, which cost them the game. I'm a little sour.
Yeah, you're
on
not
him,
alone there.
But he's another option he can perceive, even though he's not a center. I'd like to see the Kings try to. I know he has a no movement clause, so that'll be tough. But I'd like to see if I'd like to see if the Kings can somehow pry off Henrik Sedin. They're 37, so if they have any desire to win the cup, they know that their window is
that's
dwindling.
That's this year, Iginla or the Cavalier, then is what you're getting at on that front.
Yeah, pretty much.
Exactly, but Henrik Sedin, they haven't slowed down that much. Henrik Sedin had 50 points last season, so he's still a very capable player. He's not going to be the first liner, but I'd like to see if they can get them to waive their no movement clause.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you entirely on the need for maybe that one more forward, unless we think Alex Iafallo is going to be able to hold down a first line spot for the whole season. I just don't. I'm not convinced that getting rid of Muzzin or Martinez for one of them makes the team better. Maybe if we are confident in Stephen's defensive system, that once again you can put a guy like Forbert into a top four rotation, whether you're talking about Vandenberg or some mixture of somebody else, or just giving Doughty and whoever is left even more responsibility. But I at this point, and I don't think the Kings are considering it at this point. The rumor, as it was reported, was that it could potentially happen down the line, that there has been discussion. It was all very vague, but it came from both TSN and John Rosen, so we have to at least give it a little bit of play. I'm not convinced that that's going to make the team any better.
One more thing, if I can add to that.
Let's wrap it up.
Is that this is a team that can make Derek Forbert look good. That's all I have to say.
Well, that's a good transition into Derek Forbert, I think. We've talked a little bit about how the defensemen have been playing so far. We've talked a little bit about Forbert, but he just received a 2-year contract extension that'll take him through the end of the 2020 season. It'll pay him $2.5 million a year for 2018-19 and 2019-20. And as of now, it's a bridge deal, basically. It's going to take him, I believe, to his unrestricted free agency. It's like James said, if we're talking about keeping Drew Doughty at least through 2019, it's locking up a piece who, at least last year, played a significant amount of minutes, was thrown into really tough responsibility, consistently playing against the top forwards on other teams, although it was with Drew Doughty. And it's going to be 2 more years of Forbert, it looks like. So, Robin, I know you wanted to leave it just at this team makes Derek Forbert look good, but do you you sort of insinuate you think this might be a little too much money for him?
I mean, in terms of bridge contracts, I guess it's not the worst. I still don't see what all the hubbub is about Derek Forbert. I mean, he's okay. I haven't looked at the stats, and I'm on the road right now, so I can't look at, his Corsi or anything else. But I've never really been high on a guy like Derek Forbert. He's not especially mobile. He's never been especially useful in terms of, offense. So Muzzin can at least put the puck in the net. He's good for probably 10 or so goals a year. With Derek Forbert, you're hoping for 5 and going, God, yes, he actually scored. Good job, Forbert.
Yeah, I think the readers right now, if James, I'll give to you in just a second, but the readers voted on, whether it's a good monetary value. It was pretty much split down the middle. I think 60% of our voters said the money was about right. There were 15% on either end, and then 15% saying it's too much, 15% it's a bargain, and then about 10% saying, well, I really have no idea at this point. Ask me in a few months. And maybe that's the biggest qualm I think that people have is we haven't really seen too much of Forbert without Drew Doughty. There were some brief minutes last year where Forbert was with sort of the 5-6 type defenseman on the Kings. And I don't think he was particularly bad in that sense either, but it's really been the lion's share of his minutes with Drew Doughty. James, what were you going to add?
Well, mathematically, if you have Musgrove and Martinez making $4 million each, and then the young players making $950,000. $2 million is a good compromise between those two ends. This team is, after all, paying Trevor Lewis $2 million as well. And, there are some people that think Trevor Lewis is working wonders for this team, whereas other people, like myself, have soured last year, although this year I changed my mind on that.
He had 12 goals last year. What do you expect from him?
Well, Derek Forbert, it's like we're saying about, Fantenberg and Follin. The more invisible you are as a defenseman, that's a good thing. The problem with Muzzin, like I said, is although he does score a lot and has a powerful slap shot, he is on the ice for some really bad goals. The blown coverages, the way he looks so slow like molasses and just gets schooled out there. And a lot of, you see some of these highlights. Granted, most goals are because you beat the defenseman, but just the I'm sorry to say it, the foolishness, just gambling with steals when you should take the body instead, blown coverages, just slowness. He wins a lot, but he loses a lot. So because the Kings are in win now mode, and you're not going to be able to wait for yet another kid to grow and integrate into the team. I'd say if we need to trade a first again, I know fans are sour on that, but right now is the time for the Kings to consider trading a first and Muzzin to see what they can get in return. Robin, you said something about Gravel. He's a mobile, fast defenseman who can carry the puck. Maybe it's time to give him a chance.
I wish.
I don't know if Gravel is faster than Muzzin. If it is, I don't think that difference is significant enough. I mean, Muzzin, yes, last year was, like I said, terrible. That was the first year, really. It's been a sort of, constant refrain among fans that Muzzin makes too many mistakes. But last year was the first year where it really punished him. In past years, he was so dominant in possession and in the shot attempt differential that if he made a few more mistakes, he was still a net positive every time he was out there. Whereas last year, that was the year where it sort of all cascaded down on him. So if we're talking about a 30-year-old Muzzin, are we convinced that he's on the downside, that this upcoming season is going to be like last season? If it is, then yeah, sure. His value is higher than it should be on the trade market. But I just, I don't know if through six games I can really say that Muzzin is the same Muzzin he was last year. And from the eye test, I think he's better. So I'd like to see at least, revisit in December or January.
Well, I'd like to see them get through this 8-game road trip. This is going to be a huge test for the Kings.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Is it ever? we'll go ahead and, let's go ahead and move. Before we get to the road trip, we'll talk a little bit about the last few games. And I know that Robin and James, both of you, have been recapping games. So I'm happy that we're going to get both of your insight. But we'll go ahead and start with Wednesday, because that was the most recent game. That was the Carter injury game. But more importantly, it was the Adrian Kempe show and, to an extent, the Mike Camilleri show. The biggest problem that the Kings forwards had this season was that there was a black hole in that third and or fourth line, where Adrian Kempe was getting nothing out of his wingers and the wingers were not getting anything out of Kempe. And not only was the line not scoring, it was just getting buried in their defensive zone. They couldn't retain the puck. And whatever dynamic style Kempe had was not making up for their chasing the puck. Wednesday was a bit of a different story, and we got a third period unlike anything we've seen in quite some time, especially from a rookie. So, Robin, I'll start with you. I think you wrote the recap of that one, so... What were your thoughts? Was there any sign that Kempe and Camilleri were going to break out like that?
It's hard to say. I still hate this experiment of Kempe at center. I think that they need to give him a defensively responsible center and just stick with it. Somebody like Nick Shore, except perhaps somebody with more offensive instinct. But the problem with Kempe is that, and this is what Mike Sellers said before, and when they moved him to rookie, I'm sorry, when they moved him to center when he was a rookie in Ontario, is that he's so defensively inconsistent. And we saw this with, I think it was like game two or game three or something, where he's just standing there and he doesn't actually move. It was the Sharks game. So when they were up in San Jose, he's just standing there and like Bodker was allowed to move in and screen quick and then tip the puck in. And I'm like, dude,
right,
you were
right.
Puck watching. So are they poised to break out? It's really hard to say, especially because he's always been really inconsistent, even in Sweden. So my answer is I don't know.
So then the defense, I mean, like you said, that Bodker deflection goal was a huge missed assignment. We've seen the penalty trouble, but, you know, we saw on Wednesday how that can sort of be outweighed by the individual abilities. The speed that the Kings have been looking for on the second goal, he just sort of turned maybe an outnumbered attack into a wide open break and shot. And I guess, James, I don't know if you agree or disagree when it comes to leaving Kempe down the middle, but do you think that his current role is suiting him well, and do you think this is something that's going to continue the scoring we saw last game?
Well, if you guys get it your way, we're not going to have any choice because we're not going to be able to trade for another center. So we're just going to have to let
this. Oh, put it on.
Wow, way to put that out there, James.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. But
yeah,
we would have to continue with the Kempe experiment and hope that he turns out a lot like a Ryan Hartman, who's the 2013 30th pick on the Hawks. So, you know, Hartman, you know, broke out last year, and he's the leading scorer of the Blackhawks this year, and he is the reason why the Blackhawks, along with Kane and Taves, of course, but why the Blackhawks continue to be relevant this year with an aging Jonathan Taves. Where was I going with that? I like what I saw from Kempe, you know, of course. I hope that wakes him up. I'm not saying demote him. He should still keep playing. He should still get his minutes. He does need to grow with this team. Now it's time for a little consistency and hope that this isn't a one-hit wonder on Kempe's part.
I think so. Working through the background noise a little bit. Sorry, I think we're good now. But I think it was obviously an encouraging sign for Kempe, who was not looking like our number one top 25, under 25 player for the first five games this season. I think he's got, it's clear, a much longer leash than a Johnny Brodzinski or a Curtis McDermott, and other rookies who have either been demoted or have been scratched, maybe not totally because they've been awful, but just because there's are sparks needed, or in McDermott's case, that the defense has been working. But Kempe is clearly going to get every chance to succeed. Whether or not he's going to get benched in the third period a few times, I think, is up for debate. But it's clear that what he offers is something that you don't see from the Kings' top offensive talent at this point. Maybe a Tanner Pearson has that kind of breakaway ability. Maybe a Kopitar has the vision. But the sort of offensive creativity that we saw from Kempe is relevant. And it's helpful, especially when you're going to put him out there with someone like Mike Camilleri, who doesn't have the movement, who isn't going to be a playmaker. And it seems like on paper the two would work well together. It took a few games for it to get going. Camilleri was actually scratched, and we were having visions of Teddy Purcell dancing in our heads. But Camilleri, aside from the special teams excellence that we would expect and hopefully the double-digit power play goals we'd want to see from him, showed some reflexes, showed some ability to be near the net, and it was pretty encouraging. We'll see what happens there. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, and with if I may add, with Kempe, you know, he's showing flashes of very high skill. I mean, you saw his second goal the other day. What was everyone saying? It was Carter-esque. It looked exactly like Carter. It made some people cry. So at best, he can show that he has sticking power to be a contributor in the NHL. So it's just a matter of growth and consistency for him. Camilleri, I've written before, if he has the opportunity to be in front of the net, you know, he has very good hands and he's short, so you know, he's a little sneaky in there. So he has good hands. He can be the poor man's Joe Pavelski in there if we give him the opportunity to operate. So.
Yeah, that would be pretty nice, to say the least. Aside from that line, though, while Kempe and Camilleri were struggling to find their form, the Kings, at least in the last three or four games prior to that, were getting quite a bit from that first line of Kopitar and Brown and Iafallo. Robin, are you buying the Kopitar-Brown combination, at least for the near future?
For the time being, yes, and it's what they're doing when they're not scoring, or the things that they're doing that are leading to scoring chances. Brown has got his giant rear end farting over there in front of the goalie. Kopitar is doing Kopitar-esque things. And Iafallo he's got his head down and he's along for the ride. And the thing I liked about him is, and this is what John Rosen has pointed out multiple times, is that he's kind of that quote-unquote blue-collar work ethic type, where he's behind the goal line, digging out pucks and just doing what he can to get his teammates the puck. It's not about Iafallo. It's about getting the other two guys the puck.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think Iafallo, it's been interesting because there aren't many players that have broken into the lineup for the Kings and without scoring have made such a positive impression, especially among fan base, where if you're a rookie and you come into the lineup, if you're not scoring and you're in such a high profile role, the first question is always going to be, why isn't this guy chipping in? But the reaction from Kings fans, whether it's because he's fast or because he seems to be going to the right places and is all over the puck, but the reaction has been really positive. And I agree. I don't know if we can really go past the next couple weeks and assume that Iafallo is going to be there, but he's doing the right things, especially for somebody who is on a line with two players, hopefully, who are going to carry some of that scoring load. The offense has been clicking in a lot of ways. The interesting thing is that the Kings' shooting percentage right now, it's 10%. It's higher than it's been in the full season in a long time, but it's not outrageous. You're seeing other teams that are shooting, 15% in the early going, 13%, and that's not going to be sustainable. At least when you're at 10%, you think, okay, even if the Kings drop off a little bit, it's something where you could potentially see that scoring maintained, and the shot attempts have been there, and the chances especially have been there. And it was fun to go to practice and to see them practicing, having defensemen drive the middle and having players set up on the power play and even strength for tips in front, and to see it sort of cash in during games is pretty interesting. And even if Jeff Carter is out of the lineup for an indefinite unmentioned period of time, it offers some hope for the scoring to continue. As long as we're talking about Iafallo and Kempe, let's talk about the other rookies and the other new guys that have come in. James, you've mentioned Fantenberg and Follin once or twice in this podcast. What do you think they're bringing to the table, and do you think that's going to continue?
Well, they're just bringing some intelligence And that's what I like about John Stevens' coaching, is that he's allowing the players to be intelligent again. No more of the turn off your brain and just move in a coordinated cycling, checking, grinding movement. Let's use our brains to see how we can really generate stuff. Fantenberg, what I really like about his game is that his checking is smart. He doesn't check players, just to break them in half and entertain the crowd or to mess with them. Like, it's for a purpose. It's to cause a turnover so that his teammates can get the puck and generate a breakout. And that when you notice Fantenberg's game, his checking is very well timed. It's for the purpose of retrieving the puck and generating a breakout. Follin, he provides a big solid presence, a good second or third line defensive option. So I really like what I'm seeing there. I want to add something about Iafallo, though. I know some people are saying that, well, maybe if Kempe played with Kopitar and Brown, that he might be doing really well. Iafallo, I think the reason the Kings like him is because he has a proven record of producing in big situations. We saw the video of his highlights with Minnesota Duluth. He knows how to get the job done when the game is on the line, when a championship is on the line. So he has that extra wisdom, that extra intelligence that isn't easily trainable or teachable. When I see Iafallo play, I can't predict what his next pass is going to be. Like, I wouldn't have thought of that. He seems to have a knack for studying the play and knowing where players are going to be, not just one, but two or three steps ahead of that. So he has a knack for passing to making the most dangerous pass possible, a pass that I would never have thought of making if it was me out there. But he sees something before it materializes, and that's what makes his passing so much more dangerous. And I love the way he just gets in there and tries to steal pucks as well. I know he got penalized one time, but it was so worth a try. I want to see this kid do really well.
Yeah, and I think that aggressiveness and that unpredictability is, something that the coaches are looking for from Kempe and from Fantenberg to bring that element without getting into trouble. And maybe that's where Kempe has fallen short through the first few games, is he finds himself in trouble when he does that. But yeah, I think the Kings have certainly counted on NCAA guys in the past for that. You talked about the scoring in big spots, and I think Nick Dowd might have had, I think when he was in college, he had like a Frozen Four overtime winner, a conference championship overtime winner or something. You've seen Derek Forbert after 4 years at North Dakota coming in and managing to be cool under pressure. So I think that's a really good point. Robin, anything to add on the rookies? That would be a no. I think we lost Robin. So yeah, I will keep it moving then, because I have nothing else to add other than what I said. But Fantenberg and Follin have been two key pieces of a defense that is right now leading the league in goals against per game, which is not unusual for them, but it is something that we don't always see from the Kings when they are giving up more shots, which so far this year they are. So let's go ahead and I don't know if we're going to get Robin back, but James, will press on, and let's talk a little bit about the upcoming road trip. So the Kings do have a six-game road trip coming up, as we've mentioned a few times. I believe they have just departed on a plane for Columbus, and after that they take a little tour of Canada through Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, and then they head for Boston and finally St. Louis. So James, are you optimistic about this road trip? What sort of pitfalls do you see for them?
Well, I Of course I am, because I'm a fan. I want to see him do really well on this road trip, and I think the Kings, you know, when they focus, they're capable of anything. And one noticeable thing about last season is I got the sense that they were focusing and beating top teams, but at the same time they would falter against teams like Florida, for example, or even Arizona. They've lost more than once too. So they would focus and do really well, but then lose games that they needed to win. And that's what I really liked about the way they performed against the Islanders and the Sabres, because these, I call them the remote East Coast teams. Of course, from their perspective, we're remote, but the teams like the Islanders and Sabres, the Kings always seem to have trouble, against them. Maybe it's the time difference, maybe it's some type of energy thing, but it was really encouraging to see them after two slow starts, focus and implement their game, starting in the second period, and get their way. So I'm really glad that they're winning the winnable games so far this season. But at the same time, those games were really close. Jack Eichel, he single-handedly, brought it for Buffalo. And if Jeff Carter didn't block that shot by John Tavares in the waning seconds, that would have been a different story there as well. So these games are really close. We can't underestimate how close they are. So it's going to be a tough test. I think Toronto, obviously, they're going to be a big test. Toronto's got not one, not two, not three, but four exciting centers to watch, and that's why they're off to a hot start right now. Columbus, it's going to be a tough test. Anything with Tortorella is a tough test. So, and then St. Louis, that's the end of the trip. And I'd like to see how the Kings fare against what will be a rival as the season progresses.
Yeah, I think the dangerous part is the beginning and the end for sure, with Columbus and Toronto starting it off. I think most people probably have that Toronto game circled as a loss because of the firepower that Toronto brings to the table, and then you have Erik Karlsson the next day. But that's I think that there are certain complaints that every fan has about their team, whether it's playing down to competition or too much line shuffling or losing focus in the middle of a road trip. Like there are certain things that every team goes through to an extent. It's just a matter of how much. And I think it's going to be interesting going through Montreal and Boston, two teams that have, especially Montreal, that have struggled in a lot of areas to start the season. I think Tuukka Rask just suffered a concussion. Carey Price has been off his game. But it's like what happened with Eichel a couple weeks ago, where you have one player's brilliance that's it's almost enough to take a point or two from the Kings. They're going to be running into multiple types of those players, whether it's Matthews or Karlsson or Tarasenko. Now, I don't know what the records are against each of these teams in the past. I know that the Kings have sort of, won one, lost one against Toronto in recent memory. Montreal is always a little unpredictable. What do you think is an acceptable record out of this, James?
Well, playing the percentages, assuming they lose to Toronto and, St. Louis will probably be a tough one. I anticipate, that, either between, Montreal and Ottawa, they'll probably lose one simply because it's these remote East Coast teams that the Kings are always having trouble with. And so, fortunately, we only face them twice each season. So, I anticipate at least three losses in this road trip. But, if they do come out with five wins with the loss of Jeff Carter, then, you know, I will, we'll chalk it up as a success.
Yeah, yeah, I think 50% of the points on the road trip is honestly, I'd probably take that if you offered it to me right now. But it's hard to tell with some of these early season swings. The Blues have a ton of injuries, and they're managing to push through it. But, you know, maybe that adds up by the time the Kings get to town on October 30th. And that's one thing that it's easy to gloss over when you lose a guy like Jeff Carter is, the Kings have had decent health this year. Aside from that, you know, they've lost Clifford. They had Martinez out for a couple games, but you're looking at teams like the Blues or the Ducks who are missing, I think, Kessler, Getzlaff, Eves, Lindholm, Vatanen, all at the same time. It's really good that the Kings have been able to pick up points early in the season. Yes, they've been very winnable games, but they have won them. If like you said, they're able to, you know, they'll probably lose three games. They'll probably lose a couple next week, going back and forth between Toronto and Ottawa and Montreal. But if they can beat three of those teams, then I think they're in a really good spot going into next month when they come right back. They have they've got, I think, 10 home games in the first 3 weeks of November. So It's a good chance for them.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, assuming that they win only half of those games, then, you know, they do benefit from that long homestand. But the catch is then they must win, you know, a good 7 or 8 out of those 10 games. I think they're up for the task. I think there's a renewed sense of purpose this year. We saw the very revealing quote from Drew Doughty that Sarah shared. You can tell visually that, you know, there was just a lack of energy and a lack of joy. And it's nice to see this team, you know, playing with love and joy again. The childlike celebration of Drew Doughty after his shorthanded goal, that was the epitome of John Stevens' system right there, where you're having defensemen join in, totally charge the nets, and with a beautiful results like that, it makes me excited about Kings hockey again.
Right, and I think the quote from Doughty, or at least one of the quotes from Doughty, was basically saying that in the past few years it was sort of a "do I have to go to the rink again" feeling, and I was in the building for the game against Calgary, which of course was the only loss of the season. Blame it on me, sure. But the atmosphere between, you know, and maybe Doughty wasn't having fun having to deal with Matthew Tkachuk the whole game, but there were, you know, definite flashes after a really sort of crappy 30 minutes from the Kings. They poured it on. They found a lot of offense. They gave up a goal on maybe the one good chance they gave up in those 25 minutes or so. But there is sort of a spirit where you know what to expect for the last few years from Daryl Sutter's team. You know about how many goals they're going to score over the season. You know that Dustin Brown is going to have 30 points. You know that the fourth liners might get, you know, 5 goals, 10 if they're really, really lucky. But it is fun to not really know what's coming to an extent. And maybe I'll change my tune on that if the Kings lose 5 of these road games. But it's been exciting to be surprised a little bit by what we're seeing.
Yeah, definitely. Like, the Kings are just too predictable. So it's nice to see something different, some creativity, unpredictability, like you said. And, you know, Dustin Brown's resurgence. I mean, we're seeing the renaissance of Brown and Kopitar. And, you know, with Brown, you know, you got the sense that this cycling game wasn't fully a fit for him. Although he is the same size as, you know, all the other NHL players, he plays small. Like Kopitar, he plays like a big man out there. But Brown, he's like a dirty rat that tries to, you know, where can I bother people and disrupt them and make life miserable? Well,
someone's
going to
take that quote out of context. Jules from the Crown called Dustin Brown a dirty rat.
this front of net role is perfect for him. You know, he's shown he's really good at tipping shots and getting rebounds and net presence, really bothering those goalies. So this is good. And Kopitar, we're seeing him get his groove back. So that's a good thing. And they didn't score the other night against Montreal, but we know they're going to fall back down to earth. So that is a concern. But we do know that they're revitalized. So that's a good thing. But it leaves the same issue, in my opinion, is that the bellwether, the barometer of the success this season is going to be Toffoli and Pearson. So they're off to a moderate start, but with the loss of Jeff Carter, you know, we need to figure out how Toffoli and Pearson can get into the fray.
Yeah, and the Kings have been fortunate to have at least one line clicking pretty much every night, and that Carter Toffoli Pearson line looked very good on opening night, and I think they got the game winning goal. But since then, yeah, it's been a little bit of a struggle. So maybe Nick Shore isn't the answer. Maybe if John Stevens is feeling particularly crazy, he puts Adrian Kempe with them and just lets them roll. But it's going to be interesting, and we've seen a few situations so far. We've seen the Kings play with a lead and get sort of penned in their own zone a little bit. We've seen them play from behind and look really dangerous, and we've seen them do what they usually do, which is when the game is tied or the game is very close, they manage to control the puck and they manage to control the pace a little bit. But without Carter, and especially with Toffoli and Pearson, we're going to see what happens there.
Well, one thing for sure is that Brooks Leicht is not the answer, unfortunately. You know, this is not a Camilleri situation where he's been limited by, little injuries here and there, and, he has a one-year slump. Unlike Camilleri, Brooks Leicht has had a major groin injury in 2012, and his career has been derailed ever since, single-digit goal numbers. So he might, at best, he's going to have a flash of brilliance like Devin Fitaguchi and then fizzle out from there.
Yeah, and I think it's not the worst option for an 8 minute a night center, but it's not a great one, and I don't think that if you're putting him up against Nick Dowd, and Nick Dowd had his troubles last year defensively, he wasn't the stopper that people were hoping. After a hot start, he sort of came back down to earth, and the offensive ability and the vision that he was showing didn't really manifest itself, but. If you're talking about Dowd versus a 35-year-old, I think he's 35, Brooks Leicht, maybe Leicht is in great shape. If the game has passed him by, it's not because he's just totally, out of it and unconcerned and his mind is elsewhere. It's just, like I said, he struggled with injury and he's had to, he was in the AHL last year, and he was not an AHL standout by any means when he was down with the Marlies. So I'm surprised we got 57 minutes in without talking about Leicht, who did sign and was apparently going to sign a two-way contract even before Carter was hurt. But it's just one of the many questions that we're looking to answer on this road trip. We got 1 minute. Any final thoughts?
Well, this is going to be a big test, this 8-game road trip, depending on how they do, depending on how Vegas does. I'm going to make a bold prediction. The Kings will pursue James Neal quite aggressively, and time will tell on that.
All right. It's not the worst idea, and it probably won't happen for a couple of months, but maybe we'll get a month out and we'll be talking about scoring being a problem again. But for now, we can stay optimistic, just like we all did when we predicted the Kings would make the playoffs, and so far they're off to a good start. We'll go ahead and call it a podcast there. So thanks again, James, for joining, and thanks to Robin for joining. And we'll be back in a week or two with our next Jewelcast. Thanks, everybody.